Welcome to another episode of Thinking Like a Bank, where we show you how to think like a bank by applying the same strategies and principles that banks use to help you find more financial freedom in your life. I'm your host, Sarah Ibrahim. With us today, I have Ray Drew. He's dedicated his entire professional career to helping small business owners navigate through the intricacies of SBA borrowing. His job is to structure a customized loan solution that meets the unique needs of the business and guide the entrepreneur through the process. Ray's current role is Managing Business Development Officer at FundX Solutions Group, one of 14 licensed non-bank SBA 7A lenders. He is the host of the Art of SBA Lending podcast, and he just launched a YouTube channel for entrepreneurs seeking credible information about SBA 7A loans called SBA Ray. Ray, welcome to our podcast.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're with us today. I think what you do is really important considering the theme of this podcast, like thinking like a bank. And this is exactly what you're doing, right? You're helping business owners think differently and qualify for S7A SBA loans, as well as other things. So I want to touch more on that. But before we jump into that, do you mind sharing with us more about your background and what you do today?
Yeah, absolutely. I have been doing SBA lending for about 11, 12 years, basically since I was 21, right out of college. And I fell into it by accident, and I fell in love with it. So I currently work at FundX Solutions. We're a non-bank SBA lender, which is a little bit different because, you know, when you talk about getting an SBA loan, you're talking about the 7A program as your, that's the flagship. That's what most people are referring to when they think SBA loan goes up to $5 million. And any bank or credit union can make one of these loans, but the SBA actually created 14 non-bank licenses for non-bank institutions to be able to provide this 7A program. And we operate under one of those 14. So it's actually interesting because your podcast is thinking like a bank. Well, we're a non-bank technically, but it's the same idea. We're lending. So I have basically spent most of my career working and operating under non-bank licenses, which to me, I feel like it's just a better way for me to be able to provide this program to the small business community because it allows me to be a little bit more flexible and a lot quicker, which, you know, speed is everything these days.
Got it. Okay. So there's a difference between being a bank giving out SBA loans and a non-bank. So in other words, you guys don't do deposits or like checking accounts, savings accounts. It's, I guess, strictly lending through the 7A program.
Yeah. It's just a different thing. I mean, our company, about 40 employees, and all of us just do one thing. It's the ultimate specialization. And the reason the company was created was to become one of the best SBA lenders in the country. So it's a little bit different than a bank, that the idea of the program is, hey, if you can't approve something or get something done for one of your customers at the bank, well, the feds are going to step in and provide a little bit of a cushion there, a little guarantee. So if this loan goes bad, we're gonna help you with actually 75% of the loss. So that allows the bank to make loans that aren't fully collateralized or to make loans with lower equity injection requirements. That's why the SBA created it. So a bank can say, you know, we can't get this done for you conventionally, so we're gonna send you to our SBA department and they're gonna help you. And that's a little bit different than a company like us who created the company specifically just to do SBA loans.
Okay, that makes sense. And are there other types of SBA loans other than 7A, just so I kind of better understand how SBA loans work?
Yeah, I mean, the SBA has been around for decades and they have a lot of different initiatives. Lending is just one thing that the SBA does. I mean, the SBA is now a cabinet position. Under Obama, they made the administrator of the SBA a cabinet. So it's very, you're dealing directly with the president in some of these cases, which I think was great for the program, for the administration. But the 7A is like the big lending program. We, as an industry, approved $36 billion worth of 7A loans last fiscal year. Year ends, you know, the 30th of September. So that by far is the biggest program, but there are other niche programs under SBA, like the 504, which is the program I did my first couple of years coming out of college. And that's a program strictly for businesses that want to buy real estate. It's just a totally different program. And it's, I think that's like more of like a $6 billion program, just to give you an idea. And then there's other programs as well, especially for the smaller loans. They aren't as popular on the lender side. Like, it's a little harder to find lenders to do smaller loans, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But the SBA actually just put out a couple really big changes in the program like days ago that I think is going to really improve that for smaller loans.
Got it. Okay. So 7A is the most popular, and I guess compared 36 billion, right, to 6 billion, that's kind of the difference as well, as far as how many more people are using the 7A loan. And you mentioned the 504 is mostly towards real estate. Does that mean that the 7A loan can also be used for real estate?
Yeah, the 7A is kind of like silly putty. You can kind of use it for just about anything a business would need. Partner buyout, expansion, buy real estate, working capital, acquire a business, which is absolutely booming right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas the 504 is strictly for fixed assets, mainly real estate.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a cookie cutter program, whereas the 7A is, like I said, it's like you can mold it to whatever you want. I mean, it's just a guarantee. I mean, if you think about it, the government's giving any bank that wants it a guarantee, and then it's up to the bank to design their credit box, what they want to do, how they want to structure loans, what they will and won't approve. There's a lot. It's not like you just go get an SBA loan. It's going to be different. You can talk to 10 different banks and get 10 different answers on some of this stuff. So it's actually, that's one of the more interesting parts, but it also makes it a little bit more complicated for small business owners going out and seeking that capital to grow their business or buy a business.
Okay. And then let's just say, for example, somebody in the example you mentioned, acquiring, which I do know that acquiring business nowadays, that's a very popular thing to do, right? It's booming, as far as instead of building a business from scratch, you could buy it and then even take it a step further, you can finance the business. So let's just say one is trying to finance a business that also has real estate. So I guess it's like two entities, right? Like the real estate and then the business. Would the 7A loan be like one loan for the real estate and the business, or would it be like two 7A loans wrapped together?
Yeah, well, it depends too, because the maximum you can borrow through a 7A is 5 million. And anyone could borrow up to 5 million across multiple loans. You basically can sign your name on up to 5 million. But the way you do it with the 504 is a little different. So we do these all the time where someone's buying, I have one right now that I'm working on this week. Someone's buying a manufacturing company and it comes with the real estate. So we're doing that all under the 7A umbrella, one loan to acquire everything. That said, I've seen some loans or projects that are like bigger than 5 million, much bigger. And that sometimes requires a little more creativity. Sometimes you're combining a 504 and a 7A. And then sometimes you do two 7As. It just depends, but there is some flexibility there. It just depends on the deal.
Okay, that makes sense. I see that. Okay. And then now let's say, for example, one is trying to apply, right, for a 7A. They have this business in mind or whatever they're trying to do with the 7A loan. What are some things they need to consider before applying? So just so they're prepared.
Yeah, well, let's set the table here, because first of all, I just found out from the SBA at a conference about 6 months ago that about 75% of the 7A loans that were made last year were for commercial real estate and business acquisition. That I think is a big testament to real estate's always up there, but business acquisition is booming, but we're at the ground floor still. This is kind of like the golden age of business acquisition, because this has been under the radar for many years, and it's just starting to get a little bit mainstream. And I think it would be just for wealth creation to buy. I just talked to a guy who bought a business for $1.1 million. Doing something like that would involve putting down 10%. Okay.
Yes.
So $100,000. So yeah, you have to save up $110,000. It's not easy. You got to do that. Sometimes you can have investors, but a lot of folks I deal with are self-funded. So he actually, and this is a little bit of an anomaly, but he grew that business over a 2-year period and sold it for $4.4 million.
Wow.
So imagine taking $110,000 and turning it into basically where you're going to net yourself like, you know, $3 million. In 2 years. It's insane. So if you're interested in doing something, and it's a little bit of an extreme example, but you're buying these businesses for, you know, three times what the owner's bringing in. So the multiples are unlike anything else, like in stocks, people talk about multiples of revenue on some of these companies. Like this is totally, this is, you bought a business for $500,000 and you pay, you know, that, and that means the owner's taking home $250K a year, let's say. You're getting that back in 2 years and then everything else is profit. Like just to give you a really simple example, like there's nothing else in terms of investments like that. But the reason is small businesses are a little riskier. You have to have the operational chops. And that kind of brings me to what you, if you're interested in this, like as a buyer, before anything, you got to kind of get your house in order. So I look for three things. And that's number one is experience, because you have to have the right set of experience to come in and operate the business. It doesn't mean you need direct industry experience. Like if you're buying a landscaping company, which is very popular right now, you don't have to necessarily have been running a landscaping business for 5 years. Although I am doing one right now for a tree trimming business, and he is running a tree trimming business and he's buying a tree trimming business. That's like kind of a slam dunk, but I'm also doing one for someone who comes from private equity and they're buying a manufacturing business or something like that. The backgrounds of the buyers can be different, but ultimately you want management experience. That's managing people, managing a P&L, managing a budget, something like that, or direct industry experience, or both. So having some transferable skills to bring to the table is number one. Cash is the other big one, right? You need some cash. You need some skin in the game. 10% is the SBA's minimum equity injection requirement, and we do that on most deals. It is a 10% injection. So that can come in a few different forms. Now, if you have 10% sitting in your savings account, that's easy, right? And outside of that, you want to have some post-close liquidity. You don't want to drain yourself to zero and then get into a business, right? So you have a little bit of post-close cushion, just to give you a rule of thumb, because everyone always asks, and it's a very loose rule of thumb, but I would just say whatever the SBA loan payment is, times that by six. I mean, it's high level, but just to give you an idea of what post-close liquidity would look like. Sometimes less, sometimes more, but just to give you a rough idea. Now, if you don't have the 5% or the 10% equity injection necessarily, I mean, what you can look for a business that you do have a 10% injection for, but if you want to go a little bit bigger, there are a couple things you can do. And one of the ones that the SBA allows is that the seller can basically help you out with half that 10%.
Okay.
So the way they do that is by taking 5%, putting it in a note. So they're holding that back in the form of a seller note. They're putting it on full standby for the life of the loan. So we're making loans that go out 10 years, assuming there's no real estate. And so they would be basically, the seller would be parking away that 5% for, you know, upwards of 10 years or until the SBA loan's paid off. So that's just part of the negotiation with the seller. And I've done a handful of deals like that this year. I did a deal in Arizona, hair salon. The manager of the business bought it. It's like a $550,000 acquisition. So you're managing a hair salon. You're obviously not the richest person in the world managing a hair salon, but she had saved up 5% to put down. The seller held 5, and we got the deal done with 90% financing from our SBA loan. And so that's a creative way to get there. You can also get a gift. You can also get investors, but it is a little bit tough if you have zero skin in the game. Like if you're trying to raise all the money and get gifts and a seller financing and you're not putting any of your own money as the person actually signing the note, that gets a little tough, but I have done it in cases where they're already running the business. So they have sweat equity built up, right? I like that. If you're the manager of the business and you're buying the business and you've been working there for 5-10 years, I mean, you've got some sweat equity built up, and I will consider those types of requests where they're not putting in any of their actual money. But outside of that, putting a little bit, even if it's just a small amount, it shows your commitment to the deal.
Okay. You're making me want to go out and buy a bunch of businesses now. It sounds very crystal clear and makes a lot of sense. So you need experience, cash. What's the third thing?
Good credit history.
No, I did. I was looking into this and I spoke to a bank, and then they said that if you have outside investors, as long as they're not more than 20% owners of the entity, then they don't need to go through underwriting. They don't need to personally guarantee the loan. Can you elaborate more on what that means?
Yes. And it's an important point. Anyone who owns 20% or more of the business does have to personally guarantee the loan. That's 99% of the time, that's how it goes. Now, it doesn't always stop there because the bank can still ask other people to guarantee, and they could also, and they should, if one of those employees is key to the business, for example. You don't see that too often, but you can't, it's not just, I just want to make it clear, that's not just a black and white, oh, yeah. I'm 19.99%, so I'm not guaranteeing it. You got some discretion still. Now, and banks, you know, banks say things sometimes, but until the loan actually gets approved, I see this every day. I closed a loan about a month ago for someone who bought a construction business. He was in his mid-20s, believe it or not. He bought a business for $5 million. Not your typical mid-20-year-old, though. Mm-hmm. He got a very early start, very entrepreneurial, very smart. But he did it, and he ended up starting out with the first bank, and he had three investors. And by the time he got to committee for loan approval, they said, well, we want these investors to guarantee the loan because they're putting in a good amount of money. So you got to be careful about that. So that's when he came back to me and we got it done.
Yeah, because that's exactly what I was thinking. What if you just did like 19.99% for every investor, just right under that 20%? But as you're saying, that's not always the case. It's possible that somebody could still have to personally guarantee a loan, even though it's not technically 20%. It's based off of the bank, what the bank wants on a case-by-case basis. And the bank, what the bank tells you initially is completely different than when you're actually like closing the loan and like about to get funded.
Yeah, because I don't want to set like an unrealistic expectation where you can have no money, have like zero assets, get investors and just go out and buy a business. Like that doesn't really happen. At least I don't see it. I mean, I've done them where I did a $5 million acquisition where they raised like $1 million. It actually ended up being a little less, like 800,000. And then they put in like 200,000. Mm-hmm. So I remember that they put in basically 3% of their own money. Mm-hmm. And then investors put in, I think they did over 10% equity on this deal, but that one was an example of two guys that bought that business with essentially 1.5% equity each. And they were going to run it. And they had other assets. They just wanted to go the investor route. So that was one scenario where, you know, they just put in a minimal amount of their own cash. But they do personally guarantee. To your point, you got to just use your head. I mean, if you're the operator and you're in charge of running the business and you have the skills to run this business, you just don't have the cash and you have some investors that are going to come in. That's doable. You know, that is doable. And if you keep those investors to 15% or so equity, they shouldn't have to personally guarantee the loan.
God. Okay. And then you were mentioning about time. You were saying that usually SBA loan 7(a) is usually 10 years, right? But if you have real estate, it's like it's 20 years. Is that correct?
25 on real estate. And the interesting thing, which not all lenders will do, but it's absolutely normal to do. But I've just heard other people not doing it this way is if the real estate is 51% of the overall proceeds, then you can do a 25-year term on the whole thing.
Okay. On the business and the real estate together?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So you can just do one. This is a great, for cash flow purposes, it's a great little trick if the proceeds for the real estate do go over. And a lot of the time the seller, you're talking to a seller and they say, I want $2 million for the business and the real estate. Well, how do you decide? How do you allocate how much is real estate versus business? And so when you're having those conversations, it's important to know that because you're going to be way better off doing a 25-year term on the whole thing in terms of cash flow, and you'll get better rate options for that type of loan as well. However, if you ended up doing it 50-50, for example, just under 51, then you have to blend it. Now you're going to be in a 15-year term.
Got it. And by cash flow, you mean like the payments will be less over 25 years because it's principal and interest broken down over 25 years. So from a cash flow perspective, you have more left over at the end of the month.
Exactly. And that's what small business is. How much money's in the bank?
Yeah.
How much, you know, that's important. So that's going to help you out a lot.
Yeah, because I could even see it to the point where you're about to buy a business. You don't have, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're about to buy a business. You don't have real estate. And then you might go out and intentionally buy real estate with the business because it could potentially make more sense. Do you ever see that scenario?
That if you're buying real estate from a third party?
You're buying a business, and that was the initial goal, just to buy the business. But because of the terms with wrapping it together with the business and the real estate are better.
Oh, yeah.
They intend, then they shift their goals now into buying real estate with the business.
Yeah, that's happened. They're like, oh yeah, because the seller owns the real estate. I'm just going to lease it from them for a couple of years. And then maybe I'll come back and buy it. Well, I say, well, if you do it now, we can do this. And then they're like, oh, okay, yeah. And sometimes they've changed their mind.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. So what type of businesses does everything we're talking to apply to?
Yeah, so it runs the gamut. I'll list off a few of the more popular ones I'm seeing now, but home service businesses, a lot of those I'm seeing, landscaping, tree trimming, HVAC, electrical contractors. I see a ton of that stuff. I see a lot of e-commerce. I see we're doing a SaaS deal right now. And I do a lot of daycares. Mm-hmm. So we do restaurants. I mean, it's going to be, most businesses are eligible. Like 99% of privately owned for-profit businesses are going to be eligible. Qualified is a different story, but eligible for SBA, yes. I mean, there's a few weird businesses that don't fit, but you're probably not looking for those businesses anyway, like a casino.
Yeah.
You know,
a bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost every business is eligible. My question was going to be, have you seen a business get denied? But I can kind of see that, like lack of experience, lack of cash, and lack of credit. Those are probably the reasons why a business probably wouldn't be able to actually proceed and get funding.
Yeah, buyers, if a buyer doesn't have the right type of experience or they have no cash, they might need to grab a partner or something like that to come in and join in with them. Mm-hmm. But on the business side, which really on a business acquisition, I would say 60-70% of the underwriting is on the business. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the tax returns from the seller. Okay, so this is key to the seller, because I mean, if you own a business and you're prepping to sell, you got to kind of start 3 years out. Because what do small business owners like to do? They like to tax plan.
Yeah.
But then when you go to sell and you have an SBA lender, which the buyer is going to use an SBA loan to buy the business, chances are, and I'm looking at the tax return and we're saying, well, where's the profit? You know, where's all the income? Because that's what we're using to underwrite the loan. And then you have a problem there. So those types of businesses where they're just writing it down to zero, I mean, it's just not going to work SBA. But the ones that are, filing tax returns correctly, and particularly the last year plus the current year-to-date financials, that's where a lot of the emphasis is placed on the underwriting, which is like basically your most recent, year and a half. We're still getting returns for the 2 years prior, but those are the years where the SBA says, we need cash flow in these years. And the lender themselves will determine basically how much cash flow they need, because most of them aren't going to just settle for the SBA's minimum, which is basically to say, for every dollar of debt, the business needs $1.15 of cash flow.
Yeah.
Right. But most lenders want to see a little bit more cushion, especially on those larger deals where you're going up 2, 3, 4, 5 million and there's no collateral. We're underwriting cash flow. Businesses that don't have a lot of assets, but they have good cash flow. Then you're looking at maybe a 1.50, where for every dollar of debt, you got at least $1.50 of cash flow to support it. That's called debt service coverage ratio. That's really the crux of the SBA underwriting.
It's similar to like buying a house, right? Like they look at your income, debt to income ratio, but this is on the business side and underwriting the business, the cash flow of the business, how much it's making aside from the collateral, right? Because it's like, it's different evaluations, right? The collateral has a value, as well as like an insurance agency might have no assets at all, but the client base is bringing in cash flow. So the underwriting of that is going to be different.
Yeah. I got a mortgage like a month ago for my house, and I found the process to be, it was easier in this, like I would not compare the two. And most people got a mortgage, but SBA, most of my borrowers are first time. So it's completely new. And I don't like to compare it, because the mortgage is probably about three times easier to do. But if you use the right SBA lender, it's more common sense based. Because I felt like sometimes when I was dealing with the mortgage company, it's like, there's no common sense being applied. It's almost like the numbers have to be at the certain numbers and that's it. And either it works or it doesn't. But an SBA lender will go in there, a good one anyway, and understand the numbers, apply common sense, and then try to get the story behind the numbers. And ultimately, these loans are being decided by people. I'm going to my chief credit officer and saying, I have a deal here that I think we should do. Here's why. Here are the strengths. Here are the weaknesses. Obviously, it's eligible for SBA. Do we want to do this? And then we discuss it. And then we get it approved. And then if it's over a certain amount, it's more of a committee approach to look at the credit memo and decide. But that's what makes it a little bit more unique, I feel like.
And then how are, I didn't ask you about this, but how are the interest rates? Like, what's kind of the rationale behind the interest rates? Like, as of today, what have you seen some of the interest rates on these business loans range from?
Well, we know the maximum interest rate for an SBA 7A loan is prime plus 3, adjusted quarterly. Most of them are adjusted quarterly, which means it's a variable rate. There are some fixed rates out there, but most of them are variable with 7A. And on a business acquisition kind of loan, the rates are basically based on risk, or the rates are based on the overall risk of the transaction, or at least they should be. So, you know, when I'm doing a $3 million business acquisition with no collateral, I mean, it's hard to, you know, that's risky compared to, hey, I've been running my business for 10 years and I want to buy my building, you know, and the real estate is the collateral. That's safe.
Yeah.
So on one end of the spectrum, you might be up closer to the prime plus 2.5, prime plus 2.75, prime plus 3, and prime's at 5.5. So we're talking about 8 to 8.5% interest rates and climbing, right? Because the rates are going up right now.
Yeah.
Whereas real estate, you should get probably a little bit better pricing, maybe 7.25-ish in that ballpark right now for the 7A. And this is just the 7A. But the rates are set by the lender. Like the SBA does have the max rate you can charge, but the lender will set the rate based on how they feel the risk of the transaction is for them.
Okay. And the risk includes the type of business, the type of assets, the borrower themselves. What other factors?
Well, if you take it old school with the 5 C's of credit, you Google the 5 C's of credit. But yeah, cash flow and collateral are the main ones. Experience is another big one. And if it's real estate, you know, are we fully secured? Like sometimes I'm doing a deal right now where the guy owns 32 Jiffy Lubes and he's buying the property of one and he's putting in like 18% and he just wants to get it done. And I'm fully secured with the real estate that I gave him the best pricing that I could give somebody. And then on the other side of the real estate spectrum, I'm doing one right now for a watch parts company that's buying a building in Miami for $2 million and they want to expand. So they want to buy equipment and they want to buy inventory to, you know, run through that equipment and they need to hire people to operate that equipment. So buying the building for 2 million, but we're doing a loan for 2.9, financing the whole thing. There's no equity injection, no down payment. So we're going well above the value of the real estate, but that's fine. That's the beauty of the SBA 7A program. And so that interest rate would be priced a little bit higher.
Okay. Now, Ray, can listeners connect with you anywhere in the country? Like, do you help all types of businesses in every state?
Yeah, I'm all over the place. Yeah. California, did a couple of deals there, New York. I'm in Florida myself, but I did a couple of Texas. I do Georgia, but no, it's all 50, even Alaska and Hawaii, if you're listening out there.
Oh, awesome. Good. Okay. Okay. Perfect. Well, Ray, it was a pleasure speaking to you today. I'm glad you shared a lot of knowledge with us about SBA lending and I learned a lot. I took a lot of notes. I'll probably be reaching out to you in the future to work with you. How can the listeners connect with you and learn more about you?
Yeah. Well, definitely subscribe to the YouTube channel, SBA Ray, because I'm posting content on there. And then you can always email me. I'll give you my other email since it's easier. It's ray@artofsba.com. And I'm happy to help any way I can.
Okay. Sounds good, Ray. And I'll be sure to add in all the links you mentioned in the show notes below. And I'm looking forward to bringing you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
To learn more about what we do and how we can help you grow more wealth, please visit www.finassetprotection.com. That's FIN assetprotection.com. The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.